Hi. Oh, hi. We were having technical problems, so I just thought I would run a bunch of stuff that I actually wasn't going to show tonight, but you got to see it. Anyway, my name is Mark, and I am a founding member, one of five, of the group Negative Land. And Emmanuel asked me to come out here. Well, when he asked me to come out here, I said, Emmanuel, well, I don't, you know, Negative Land, we're not literally doing anything to do with hacking. And I don't actually know, you know, that much about the kind of stuff that that is covered here. I follow a lot of it. And the reason he wanted us here is he said that what you guys do very much fits a kind of an ethic that is part of the hacker world. And that's actually all the stories that I'm always following about intellectual property and stuff going on with hacking. The interest to me is not always in the specifics about the code or how something is done. It's really more to do about these different ways that are evolving that you can, you know, do stuff you're not supposed to do. And Negative Land has a whole history of really enjoying creating work where we're doing things that we did it kind of because we thought we weren't supposed to do it. So there's a bunch of stuff I'm going to touch on about copyright law, intellectual property stuff, fair use, anti-corporate activism, media literacy. But the best way I thought to do it was just to kind of give an overview of how we started and how we got to where we are. And I'm going to illustrate that by showing a bunch of different video clips that we've made. And the videos, I should mention, none of these videos were made at the time the audio tracks were made. They're all stuff we've made in the last 5 years, collaborating with a whole bunch of different different filmmakers that we've gotten to know. So none of these were, they're not promotional videos that were made when we put out our new album to get on MTV or something. So Negative Land started in, I don't know, 78, 79, a bunch of weird kids playing around in their bedrooms, getting into making machines do stuff that they're not supposed to do, which probably sounds familiar to a lot of you, and plugging sound boxes in the wrong way to see what would happen, learning how to do things like make tape loops. How many people here know what a tape loop is? Oh, good. Okay, this is back in the old days of analog, where if you wanted to have a sound repeat over and over, you'd record it onto a piece of reel-to-reel recording tape, usually about a quarter inch wide, cut it with a razor blade, and tape one end to the other, and you could actually make a loop out of it and make it repeat over and over. Back then, doing things like that just seemed like, you know, discovering fire or inventing the wheel. It was extremely exciting. And I grew up, I'm a middle-class white kid, and the TV set was always on, and for reasons which I can't really explain to you, it was the most natural thing in the world to us to mix in stuff off of the TV and radio and what was going on in the media world around us into our records. And I'm going to show a short piece. It's called Truth in Advertising, and this is something from a talk radio show that guys calling in who wants to talk to someone about advertising and truth in advertising. And we took it and repeated some of the phrases and rearranged things and altered it so that they're still talking about the same things, but it now sort of a whole different meaning has been sort of brought out of it, out of the content of the words. And we collaborated with this filmmaker in Columbus, Ohio, James Towning, to make this piece.
This is Pennywise. Joan, you're next.
This is Sue.
Ah, hi, Sue. How can I help?
Jim, I really have a problem with impulse buying. I never...
This is Pennywise. Joan, you're next.
This is Sue.
Ah, hi, Sue. How can I help?
Jim, I really have a problem with impulse buying. I never have money left for anything.
Oh, why?
Jim, Jim, I really have a buying impulse problem buying anything.
Wait a minute. Go ahead and use some of that money to bring some happiness.
Jim, I really have a problem. Jim, I never have money left for impulse buying.
A lot of people have that problem. Take cash.
Good idea. I feel we really need to buy right away.
After all, money is only paper and metal till you put it to use.
I never have money left.
But we've already decided to buy.
Impulse.
I really think it'll help.
Good idea.
Oh, thanks. Okay, let's go to line four. This is Pennywise. I'm Jim Phillips, and your name is...
Bob.
Hi, Bob. What can I do for you?
I get confused by all the claims made in commercials.
Oh, this is Pennywise. Line six, you're on. And your name is...
Bob.
Caller number five, you're on the air with Pennywise. I'm Jim Phillips.
I get confused by all the claims made in commercials.
Oh, let's go to line seven on Pennywise. Hi, I'm Jim Phillips.
Bob, commercials.
Oh.
I get confused by all the claims made in commercials.
Oh, well, listen... I think your first responsibility is to yourself and your family.
The what?
Thanks for the call. Hello, you're on Pennywise with Jim Phillips, and you are...
Bob.
Okay, let's go to line four. This is Pennywise. I'm Jim Phillips, and your name is...
Bob.
Ah.
Commercials.
Hello, caller.
I get confused by all the claims made in commercials.
Ah, and your name is...
Bob. Bob. Bob.
Hi, Bob. What can I do for you?
The what?
Go ahead.
I get confused by all the claims made in commercials.
You sound frustrated.
It's because I am.
Well... My kids and I, for example, love to build things with scrap lumber.
The what?
All right. Thanks for the call, Carl.
Bob.
This is Pennywise, line six. You're on.
Bob.
Yeah, Barb.
Bob.
Go ahead.
Claims made in commercials.
Yeah.
I get confused.
Why?
I get commercials confused.
I can imagine.
The what?
Well, many religious people follow the biblical plan of tithing. You may want to visit with your clergy about it, but of course...
The what? The what? Commercials. Commercials. I get confused by all the claims.
And your name is...
Bob.
Yeah, that's a tough one. A lot of people have that problem.
The what?
Truth in advertising.
I get confused.
Advertising, though, can be a really good source of information because of the truth in advertising policy.
The what?
Because of the truth in advertising policy.
The what?
Truth in advertising.
The what?
Truth in advertising. Truth in advertising. You see, the law requires advertisers to tell the truth.
The what?
The truth. The truth. To tell the truth. Truth in advertising.
Good point.
Oh, so listen carefully to the wording of an ad.
The what?
The truth in advertising.
What?
Well, then you have to decide if honesty goes both ways, right? After all, so this is Pennywise. You're on the air. Hi, Bob. What can I do for you?
Yeah, Jim, this is Charlie.
Okay.
I've got a moral question for you.
The what?
Now, wait a minute. Thanks for the call, Bob.
This is Charlie. I've got a moral question for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a matter for your own conscience, Charlie.
I figured you'd say something like that.
All right. Why don't you give it a try this year?
Okay, but they'll never catch it.
Well, thanks for calling, Charlie.
Thanks.
This is Pennywise. Line six. You're on.
Yeah, Jim, this is Charlie.
So, we started doing this kind of stuff, and we weren't worried about things like copyright infringement or who owns this stuff. But what was exciting to us about doing it was ripping things out of their context and, you know, without asking permission, just taking this stuff and reusing it in our own way, repurposing it, or doing what's now, I've heard, used in certain court cases. It's called transformative reuse. It's a very fancy way of, fancy word for stealing stuff. We didn't know anyone who was working this way, who was doing this kind of stuff. We put out our records ourselves on our own record label. And the more we kept working with the material, the more we started to think about who makes this stuff. Where's this stuff coming from? That we're taking from network television, from radio stations, talk radio shows, CB radio, shortwave radio. You know, there's all this media out there. And... one of the things that we were also doing while we made records is we still have this live weekly radio show. It's called Over the Edge. And every week we do a live cut-up improvised mix around a theme. So we end up, one of the reasons why we have so much material that ends up on our records, so many millions of little sound bites, is because we're always doing this radio show every week and collecting all this great stuff. So we've done whole shows about advertising, or about the moon, or about fire, or about war, or about UFOs. This next piece I'm going to show you, we've done a series of radio shows about guns. And we ended up with a lot of really amazing material related to guns and how, you know, guns show up in all of our media. And we ended up doing this piece. This is a longer piece. It's about 8 minutes long. It's just called Guns. And The film footage also, it's, you know, it's all stuff you'll recognize. It's all stolen from all over the place. And our work started to get more, it's a lot of the stuff we're doing I think is still funny, but it was starting to get more pointed in its in critiquing things. And this we made in collaboration with a filmmaker from Chicago named Peter Neville. So you ready?
Gun in your hand, you might need it.
All right. I'll take my gun.
Now we're gonna have that talk.
No money.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns.
Gee.
Those who dig. You dig.
Well, the difference between justice and murder.
He's coming out. I can see his horse.
Gosh, what excitement.
Go ahead. Load up and shoot.
I was right there listening, and I just couldn't leave till I heard both the stories.
Time sure flies.
You only know how to play, or do you know how to shoot?
I'm gonna kill you with this one bullet if you try to take your gun. So, come on, take it. If you can.
Hand it over. You'll be dead before you can draw the hammer back.
That's so.
Hey. Good shooting. Very good shooting.
Where'd you get that?
Come on, stay back and hold two shots. Now, who wants the second one?
Well, you know music. And you can count. Bravo. All the way up to two.
Drop your gun, sir.
Don't do it. He killed Sal, but we got four guns. He's only got one bullet left in that derringer.
One's better than none.
We got him.
Let's see if that's true. Count to three.
All the way up to six. One.
When I say three, draw. One.
If you say two, I'll kiss
the count.
Two.
Gee.
I'll kill the next man who speaks.
Gosh, what excitement.
Wait a minute.
Don't go shoot again.
That wasn't Bill. That was me. Jingles, and don't break for that door again.
Copy, man.
Guns.
Instead, men's pants off!
Guns.
crazy-eyed fool.
What are we going to do, Sheriff?
Start closing in. I'll come in from this side.
So what's fun for us in collaging like that is we take all these different elements, you know, that have nothing to do with each other, never knew that they would end up being put next to each other by somebody later on, and you can kind of evoke this whole other, these very layered meanings that come through to everyone who's seeing it or hearing what we're doing. And I really love the fact that I really think it's about, it's your brain really puts all this together in the end and makes the meaning out of it. It's very different than if I was writing song lyrics. You know, and in this case, we really like the idea of just evoking this kind of mythologized, mediaized Old West imagery with all these kids stuff. And just every so often, we'd throw in a real bit of footage, which a lot of which you probably will recognize, of real people really being killed. There's not much of it, but just enough to hopefully make the whole thing more unsettling in a certain way. Anyway, as you can probably guess from what I've been saying, we don't go out, we're always collecting material, but we're not, we get inspired by what we find. You know, we don't decide, hey, let's make a whole album all about Microsoft, you know, or something. We really get inspired by the material we find. One of the tracks that we made, which has sort of become one of our more well-known and notorious tracks, was inspired by finding a recording called If Footmen Tire You, What Will Horses Do? And this is the Reverend Estes W. Perkle from Louisiana, recorded in 1971. He was talking about the communists who were going to take over in the next 6 months or so, and they were going to put everyone into special camps and brainwash us all by playing over a loudspeaker 17 hours a day the phrase, Christianity is stupid, communism is good, give up. So we loved that. We thought that was great, especially because it was a Christian saying it. It was just so irresistible. So we decided we had to do some sort of, I don't know why, it just evoked in us a sense of doing some heavy rock thing. So I'm going to play just a little bit of it, not the whole track, just for those of you who haven't heard it, because it led to some other very interesting things that I'll talk about next.
loudspeaker spoke up and said, The loudspeaker spoke up and said, Communism is good.
So you kind of get the idea. One thing I always liked about that piece is that we never explain why it's stupid. It's just stupid. I mean, and the other thing that's nice about it is that people sometimes say, "Well, do you really think Christianity is stupid and communism is good?" And I don't really feel the need to answer that question because we weren't saying it. You know, somebody else said it. It's just we just used it. We selected that. So, anyway, some of you are going to know the story I'm going to tell here. Probably most of you won't. But Negative Land, the record that this was on, did very well on college radio. And we had played live just occasionally. We always do these very involved conceptual shows involving costumes and props and films and ridiculous stuff. We're from the Bay Area, and we played live usually about once a year. But we thought, since it was doing so well on college radio, maybe we could tour. Well, it turned out the tour was going to lose money, and we all were going to quit our jobs to go out on tour. None of us could afford to quit our jobs to go out and tour. And as I mentioned, we were more and more interested in how the media worked and the source of this stuff that we were borrowing and we were using. And so we finally decided to do something a little different. We actually decided to directly throw something into the media meat grinder, see what would happen. So we ended up a member of our group who has a pretty strange sense of humor read an article about a boy in Rochester, Minnesota who had chopped up his mother, brother, sister, and father with an axe in the middle of the night. Supposedly some sort of argument or something to do with music. They were a devout Catholic family. So in sort of a fit of black humor, Richard wrote this press release up blaming the cancellation of our tour on this quadruple axe murder, and saying that Negative Land was being investigated by federal authorities because of their song Christianity is Stupid, which somehow precipitated the murders. Maybe there was backwards masking, something. And at this time, you know, there was a lot of stuff in the news about music causing people to kill people. But anyway, Richard came up with this idea. We all looked at it, and we decided it was kind of a strange idea, but it was a lot more interesting than the truth. So we decided to put it out as a press release. And some very interesting things happened. And we learned a lot of stuff. Stuff I already knew kind of in an abstract way, but nothing I'd ever experienced. And I'm trying to think how much to tell you here. We put out this press release, and some zines wrote about it. And then a statewide music magazine read those and called us up, and they did an article about it. And we decided at that point that we didn't want to sort of stimulate the story anymore. We just wanted to let it take its course. But what we were finding was that once it got reported, it kind of got into the media food chain, that it started to take on a life and a truth of its own. So I was working at the time as an assistant nursery school teacher, and I got a phone call from the CBS News affiliate in San Francisco, KPIX, and they wanted to do a story on this. And I've never found out how they figured out where I worked. That was kind of scary. But we all gathered together at our recording studio, and they came by and they did a news piece on it. And I'm going to show you that news piece. And this is exactly what, this is the news as it ran. And just keep in mind, this was a slow news day, so they decided to run this as the lead story at the top of the hour. So I'll talk more about it after you see this.
Good evening. Topping Nightcast, a possible link between murder and music.
Music performed by a rock group right here in the Bay Area.
Four members of a Midwestern family were murdered. The 16-year-old son is the prime suspect. Members of the experimental rock group Negative Land have been drawn into the case, and prosecutors won't even tell them for certain that their music, how their music might be involved. Hal Eisner has our report.
It was the kind of murder case that friends and neighbors said didn't make sense. They didn't understand how an A student from a good family could murder his brother, sister, and parents with an axe.
He was not a homicidal maniac.
He did not show any signs
of wanting to hurt anyone.
David Brom was accused in the multiple axe slayings, but now, almost 3 months later, many are still wondering why. One explanation may involve a Bay Area music group called Negative Land. Negative Land's music is highly critical of the mass media, nuclear war, and handguns. The group thinks their music is humorous, but they don't find it a bit funny that one of their songs poking fun at religion may have sparked a dispute among the Brahms, triggering the murders. They say federal authorities asked them to cancel a long-planned 17-city tour and eliminate live performances until the conclusion of the investigation. The probe apparently involved their song, Christianity is Stupid.
Christianity is stupid.
Christianity is stupid. It's hard to listen to the cut and not laugh. If you have any sense of humor at all or whatever, it's hard not to see the humor in it, and that it would result in anything as serious as this, I think is ridiculous.
This isn't the first time controversial music has been linked to tragedy. Charles Manson said his murder spree was influenced by the Beatles' Helter Skelter. It's believed Night Stalker suspect Richard Ramirez was influenced by AC/DC's Highway to Hell album. And Ozzy Osbourne's song Suicide Solution became the focal point of an actual suicide case involving a Southern California teenager.
What you can say is that music is a bystander involved to a certain degree, but most unlikely that it generated the mayhem. If it did, there'd be a lot more mayhem around.
Meanwhile, the members of Negative Land are hoping for a speedy conclusion to the Brom case in Minnesota and eventually a return to their live performances and a career that, after 9 years, had finally taken some positive turns.
But a quick end to the bizarre murder case may be in doubt. A Minnesota judge has ruled that David Brom will face trial as a juvenile. The prosecutor wants Brom tried as an adult, and he's appealing. I'm Hal Eisner, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
It'll be several months before the court decides. The date for his murder trial can't be set until that decision.
I'm Hal Eisner, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
It'll be several months before the court decides whether to try David Brom as a juvenile or an adult. The date for his murder trial can't be set until that decision is made. That means it's also not clear how long the band will be restricted from performing.
Anyway, I guess something I want to emphasize is we did all this as an experiment, right? We had no idea that this would happen. It was more interesting than the truth. And so we were really learning an amazing amount of stuff as this was going along. One thing that I really enjoyed is that every time anyone wrote about the story, there was no space to really get into anything about the song itself and what that was about. They didn't have enough room, but they always had to mention the song. So every time a story was written or when we were on television like this, you always had this phrase, Christianity is stupid, just playing. And I enjoyed that. That was something that was kind of a hidden inside thing that would kind of come out. We also learned a lot about how if you feed the media certain kinds of stories, they can find it really irresistible. We learned a lot about how much the media is very irresponsible and does not check their facts. We learned a lot about how they cannibalize each other. They thought this story was true because they'd read about it in other news media. The day after this ran, we were called by the San Francisco Chronicle, and Richard did a great thing. He said, we don't want to talk to you. We just had a rock thrown through our window after the news broadcast last night. People think we're trying to publicize the band in some way, and our dishes are broken. And that ran as the page 3 story in the front section, that we are now under attack because of the media coverage. In the end, we decided to shelve the project we were working on at the time, and we'd of course have been collecting all the media and recordings we were getting. We were getting people from the press calling us on the phone. We decided to make a record about what we had done and to document the whole thing and use all the media sources we were collecting. And because of that ridiculous comparison to Helter Skelter and the song Christianity is Stupid, we decided to call the record Helter Stupid. So at this point, I remember thinking, well, you know, this is giving us a pretty strange reputation. You know, we've done something that I think is a really interesting, fun, and funny creative prank project that also sort of exposes a lot of stuff. But we also really were exploiting a real tragedy. I mean, those people really were chopped up by that boy. And I don't think there's any way around that. We had discussions about this because we felt some qualms. But, I mean, Don in our group said something to me that's always stuck with me. And he said, good art does not have to be nice. But I remember thinking that, well, this is a strange new kind of image that's going to stick with us forever, this very dark thing. I can't imagine we'd ever do anything else that would get any kind of attention like this had. So anyway, a few months after that, I was handed a tape recording at a show of ours in Portland, Oregon that was an interesting tape recording of a top 40 DJ named Casey Kasem. And this inspired our next very interesting project, which altered my life dramatically, and it's probably why I'm here now. This is a tape recording of, and some of you will know this story, but it's Casey Kasem, top 40 DJ, also the voice of Scooby-Doo and Shaggy on the cartoons, having a very, very bad day. Shut off that cell phone. I heard that. Stop that. thank you. Casey Kasem is having a very bad day in the recording studio, trying to do an introduction to his radio show. And the way that you do that is you do a lot of takes over and over to get a really, really good take. And I don't know if he had a drug problem or what was wrong, but he was being a total asshole to the engineer. And I think the engineer's revenge was to get this tape out to the public. So we heard this tape, and just as an aside, I'm realizing that I don't think we would have been inspired to make this record now in this era, because anything like that surfaces, someone would put it on the web and it would be everywhere. And it's really interesting to realize that era is kind of over, where there's a certain kind of special uniqueness of anything you can have, of a special cool record, a special cool piece of media, a blooper, a strange thing. You know, once any one person has it and it's up there, if you can access the web, you're going to find it. But at that time, that didn't exist. So we had these special tapes. Almost nobody had them. And we were just really inspired to do something with them. Casey happened to be trying to do an introduction to a new band from Ireland named U2, who was having their first few hits in the United States. So we decided, I think by this point we were really starting to get into really doing things that you weren't supposed to do. Like, we were really... So we made a record that looked like a new album by U2 called Negative Land. It sampled from U2 without permission. It sort of did a cover version of their song, kind of, and altered the lyrics. You're not allowed to do that. You can do cover versions of songs without permission if you pay a licensing fee. You're not allowed to alter lyrics without permission. What else did we do? We took the side of the record that had the most fucks and shits and swearing on it, and we called that the special radio edit mix. Because we were, and I found out it worked. We were thinking, we want to get some DJs to think, well, that's the version you play on the radio, right? So that worked. We put this thing out, and we didn't expect what happened next to happen. We thought at worst we would get a slap on the wrist or a nasty phone call from a lawyer somewhere, because we felt like we're too small, we're flying under the radar. You know, who gives a shit, so to speak? And what happened was 10 days later we got a 200-page lawsuit from Island Records, U2's record label. They'd hired, in fact, the lawyer they hired to sue us was this $400 lawyer who worked for Madonna. And we didn't think anyone would take it quite that seriously. But we did find out, it's always amazing, should never underestimate how inattentive and stupid people can be. Because we then heard that there were, like, Tower Records were putting it up in their front of the store in a big display, thinking it was the new U2 record, and no one had checked it. Very strange things like that happen. The best stories I heard were from hardcore U2 fans who bought it and thought it was great and really liked it. So, anyway, what I'm going to play you is, it's just a single, but we ended up making a film to go with the B-side of it, and the song that we were doing a cover version of by U2, it's called I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. And we ended up using this image of a spy plane that's called a U2, which is the band U2's namesake, which seemed to kind of fit because it was a spy plane that was prophetically enough shot down in 1960 in an event that changed world history, for those of you who know about it. The Cold War was starting to actually wind down, and it started it right back up again. But the plane was on a mission looking for things and going somewhere it wasn't supposed to go. And so we ended up using all these other tapes we had of a bunch of CB radio guys who were trying to find somebody who was taunting them to beat the shit out of them. And we had tape recordings from old children's radio shows that were people looking for things. We have Casey Kasem, of course, and we had some stuff with people talking about obscenity in rock and roll music. And we made this piece. This one we made completely ourselves, and this was all shot on Super 8 film and then edited on video.
Now, we're up to our long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio. And here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's come start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. That's the letter U and the numeral 2. The four-man band features Adam Clayton on bass, Larry Mullen on drums, Dave Evans, nicknamed The Edge, on... This is bullshit. Nobody cares. These guys are from England, and who gives a shit?
Oh, yeah.
Just a lot of wasted names that don't mean diddly shit.
This is bullshit.
musicians, and then you got to go into somebody dying. God damn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Why are we doing these instrumentals? Because we got them? I don't understand it. This is all something new. I don't understand it. This is all something new. I don't understand it. I think that people who read more into the music than is really there. Will somebody find out the goddamn answer? And if this, they consider this vulgar and despicable, and have songs like Teach Me Tonight, Let You, I Call For, the All of You, I Call For, those who consider euphemism for something dirty. Who gives a shit? Some vulgar, dirty act. Diddly shit. The Kingston Trio famous only used the word damn to be banned on the radio. God damn it. In the 60s, it was a song called Louie Louie. God damn it. Upside down. God damn it. Every way they could play a naked to the dirty message. God damn it. Never found the dirty message. The FCC was brought in. Oh, fuck. In the 70s, people went through the same experience looking for the dirtiness of the song. I think something that the satanic message is saying. Concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. It's a last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is that's up-tempo, and I gotta talk about a fucking dog dying.
That guy gets fucked with so much shit.
Who knows?
You might be
destroying
his town.
What is this fucking ponderous, man? Ponderous, fucking ponderous. This is American Top 30, right here on the radio station you grew up with, Music Radio 138. Oh, fuck.
So, yeah, we've never had a hit record. We have like our hit lawsuit, sort of. Oh, this of course, when Island Records decided to do this, I guess the feeling we had was, even though we were up against these impossible odds, it was kind of like there was this sort of feeling like, well, they don't know who they picked to fight with because, you know. We're going to do something with this. And because U2 was at the time, and they kind of are again, the world's most popular rock band, we realized we've been handed this amazing opportunity that the mainstream news media had to write about the story. It was just too interesting of a story not to write about, especially because U2 had a real do-gooder, liberal kind of an image, and because U2 was doing this Zoo TV tour where they were in themselves infringing on copyright in the way they were using video imagery in their performance. So there was all these juicy aspects to it. And we realized, kind of like what I was saying, the way that phrase, Christianity is stupid, got out there in that other, in the Axe Murder hoax, we realized that when the news media would want to write about it for the more soap opera aspects, but what they would have to do in the interest of so-called objectivity is they'd have to cover our point of view. And what we got to talk about was we were realizing that after 11 years of doing this work and no one caring about it, we were now seeing, because of the popularity of hip-hop, rap, De La Soul got sued by Flo and Eddie of the Turtles. There was a case with Biz Markie, and that something was going on where the people who, the giant companies that own and controlled our culture were starting to send us this message that the only thing you're supposed to do with all this culture and information and entertainment and news is consume it very passively and don't think of doing anything with it or we're going to bring our fist down upon you. And we realized that this was, you know, a very bad thing. At the time, in 91, you know, there was no such thing as the Electronic Frontier Foundation. There weren't events like this going on. And it was kind of like we'd been handed this sort of mission from God that, okay, Negative Land, you know, you have to go out and talk about it from this, these issues from the standpoint of art and culture and creativity, because all we were hearing back then were managers and lawyers and business people who all, you know, just sound, were all people sound like the way Jack Valenti sounds now. We'd learned a lot going through the axe murder hoax of how to work the media. And we had an amazing little bit of help. We got a phone call from Sinead O'Connor's publicist, who at the time Sinead O'Connor and her publicist hated you two, and said, Negative Land, would you like to have the press list for all of Ireland and England so that you can so you can harass them there too? And we said, great. You know, so this all took place over press releases, real press releases, not email or anything like that. And what it's began a saga that took 4 years of us dealing with it literally every single day of our lives, fighting with these guys. We subsequently published a magazine to document what had happened to us. We were then sued for putting out a magazine about being sued for putting out a record. That got really stupid. And I learned a lot of things. I mean, one thing I learned is that as much as I like to see, there's a lot of good lawyers out there trying to do good things. I essentially, in my heart of hearts, I do not believe in our legal system. It is not set up to work. You know, it is not anywhere remotely near being a level playing field. It is not about justice. And that was something I didn't really understand until I went through this to see how much things could be manipulated to really steamroll us, because we just had no resources to fight them. Anyway, I'm going to keep going, but I can't really see. But does anyone have like some questions so far? Negative Land. For about 20 years, we would never say where we came up with the name Negative Land. That was always a secret because it's kind of embarrassing. But the name actually comes from an early 70s German electronic band called Neu, and we picked the name for one of their tracks. I was a teenager. I now think it's sort of embarrassing to have a band that's named after some band's song that you like. But I think we also really grew into the name. The name ended up fitting what we do really, really well. So, yeah. Anyway, anyone else? Oh, every video stuff comes, I guess, from the same thing as audio. You just have to obsessively collect this stuff. I mean, it's just really, a lot of it's just incredibly boring. You have to wade through tons and tons and tons and tons of lousy stuff to find the good little bits. Yeah. Well, what happened with the U2 case? Well, we settled out of court with Island Records because we didn't know enough about the pro bono, you know, legal angle. We didn't know enough about how good of a case we had. And that is something that I have always regretted, because we really did have a really great case, but we didn't know enough. What we did do was we mounted a publicity campaign to basically not only just bring these issues out in the open for discussion, that maybe there is something wrong with this kind of omnipotent godlike control of intellectual property, that the balance of copyright has been completely lost, and that's been talked about a lot here at this at H2K2. And we wanted to, what else did we want to do? We wanted to just totally embarrass these people and make them look as horrible as we possibly could, because even if we couldn't, I mean, I hope the fight we fought helped other people and helped, you know, get the dialogue out there and raise people's awareness. But at the very least, I was hoping it would at least get so many people looking so bad that they would just leave Negative Land the fuck alone forever. And we believe it or not, everyone keeps thinking we keep getting sued. We, other than these two lawsuits, we have not been sued. We have been left alone. And I have talked to people, like I knew that this guy who I talked to, who was worked at Geffen Records when Geffen still existed, and he was saying, no, you did a really good job. He says, everyone in the industry knows who you are, and no one's going to bother you, because they just don't want to, you'll just make them look bad, and we are just leaving you alone. So there's a double-edged sword with that, too, I realize, is that all the effort we put into publicizing this and bringing attention to these issues, even if people supported our point of view and agreed with us, we also were publicizing the fact that, hey, if you do step out of line and do something like this, here's what could happen to you. And so I know other audio collage artists who kind of stopped what they were doing because they said, well, more power to Negative Land, but my God, I don't want to go through that. I think things have changed a lot, though, in terms of audio collage, and I want to, I'll come back to that later on. So the story of what happened is what happened with the U2 lawsuit and how it all settled is very complicated, and we put out a book which actually documents the whole thing. And sort of in our typical fashion, the book is not a narrative retelling of the story. It actually is the documents. It is the press releases, lawsuits, faxes. We had an overzealous fan calling Casey Kasem, making death threats against him, trying to get him to allow us to have our record back. And then in a bizarre fashion of life following art, we really were investigated by federal authorities because of that. We all got calls from the FBI, one of whom happened to be named Dave Evans, which is the real name of the Edge. I don't know what that means, but... let's see. Anyway, I'm going to keep moving along here. We ended up in the book I mentioned we published. We decided that since we were doing a book that was called Fair Use, which is the name of the book, and we were trying to, at the time, we wanted to call it that because that was what we thought was the thing we really wanted to bring out to people's attention to. And now I'm seeing this term used all the time. I'm sure you all, to some degree or other, know what it means. But nobody knew back then. And I could never have imagined that one day things like Napster would be on the front page of the New York Times and Fair Use would be, you know, in Time magazine as just being discussed as an issue. We published this book and we decided that since we were doing a book about fair use, about infringement, about copyright law, about collage, that it was the safest place in the world to go to infringe on the people who are the most well known for being lawsuit happy. So we went and used Irving Berlin, Led Zeppelin, and of course Walt Disney. So we made an interesting track using some stuff that we manipulated from Walt Disney's film, The Little Mermaid, and a recording that we got of a music industry attorney threatening someone over the telephone. We made this audio track, and a number of years later, someone contacted us who was a fan of our work, who happened to work on the Disney, worked for Disney doing the Saturday morning animated show version of The Little Mermaid. And this guy's name is Tim Maloney. Some of you may know he oversaw the Droplift project. Yeah. So Tim and Negative Land and Tim, we hit it off really well. And I said, Tim, you know, I've always wanted to do something taking this Little Mermaid thing we did and try and make something using, you know, the Little Mermaid. And I don't know what you think, and I don't know whether you could lose your job, but, you know, would you like to work together? And he agreed. So what I'm going to show you next is an very interesting piece. It's my favorite of all the stuff I'm showing you tonight. And this whole thing was done on Disney's dime and rendered on their computers between midnight and 6 a.m. in the morning. And it made for a very funny little piece. So this is called Gimme the Mermaid.